saw the sign.
Well, Fly 92.
That's a good point, Andy.
Milk Duds.
Talk high. Hog tie anyone.
My mood ring was brown for shit when I watched that.
Kids were always dead. I always died of diphtheria or something.
Yo!
Somebody stop me.
Medium giants.
Yes, Minkus.
It's the 413. Let's tell everybody to listen to our show.
It's a Tuesday night. You've got nowhere else to go.
And we're on with Abbeville and DJ Ron. And with Garp and DJ Neho, we'll take your friend or foe. Just listen to our show.
Good evening, everyone, and welcome to the latest episode of the 413 podcast featuring the PCB peeps. Good night to Abby.
Hello.
Good evening to Andy.
Hey.
Also a swell evening to Jared.
Hello.
Also to Bill.
Yo, what up, peeps?
And I am also your host tonight, Eric. And tonight, we're going to talk about some nostalgia. Kind of the whole point of this podcast to begin with was just like talking about shit from back in the day. And I had a couple text messages yesterday that were telling me to watch a 48-hour special that was coming out last night about Louis Lent. And so for those from Pittsfield or know about sort of like the history of Pittsfield, that was a name that was synonymous with fear as a child, and it was something that really kind of like terrorized the town for a handful of years and still sort of like carries this black cloud.
For sure.
And it got me thinking, so the year that Louis Lent was caught was 1994. And so that was 30 years ago, 30 year sort of like anniversary to that. And so I thought tonight what we could do is talk about some things that maybe were a little bit more exciting and fun about 1994. If you were a kid growing up in Pittsfield or I guess anywhere, this is pretty universal. I have some questions for you all about some things that happened in 1994. Want to get your takes on those. I didn't want to do a lot of research for this. It was more like, let's just discuss because I want to sort of go back and remember things instead of just like Wikipedia telling me what happened for those times. So like, let's get some fresh takes on those. So for viewers and listeners at home, feel free to crack a Shirley tea. Andy's got one right here.
Already done.
Shout out to the makers of Saranac Shirley Temple in a bottle because Andy just got his hands on one and it looks like he's loving it.
I'm going to say this. They say here it was created in the late 1930s. This world famous non-alcoholic cocktail is universally loved by kids.
Does it have an age 9 and under?
It says, oh God, it does. Oops, I'm not supposed to drink.
Well, they put it in glass, so I guess adults can have it too. Do you have anyone in your life that like constantly tries to tell you like that everything would be better with booze in it? I've got a family member who like every time you drink anything, it's like, oh, that'd be good with a little rum in it. That'd be good with a little whiskey in it. It's like
I got a cousin like that. He might be listening. I'm not going to dox him.
Yeah. It's up, funny because like
yeah, I didn't say the last name though.
We'll see.
Making progress.
I'll see this person on holidays and stuff, and it's like they always offer you like every possible drink imaginable. You know how that's just like a thing that happens when you're older where like people come to your house and you have to tell them everything you have in your fridge. Mm-hmm. I have one old can of Spindrift is lemon. I have four lime. I have Sunny D grape stuff. Great Crystal stuff. Light back in the, I think I made that a couple weeks ago, but there's like this alcohol take on that. That's just, I find very humorous. put a little rum in it, Andy.
just a little.
Make that a hard Shirley.
Yeah.
Andy, you were telling us at the Friday the 13th party that you were pounding Shirley teas at a work function and someone thought they were hard.
Yes.
And was like impressed by you and then found out they were not hard and then immediately became shame. What? Ashamed to work with you.
One of my colleagues, Cindy. What up, Cindy? She thought the bartender was flirting with me because she gave me a free Shirley Temple. And I said, she said, well, I think she thinks you're cute. And I was like, I don't think so. She's like, she just gave you a free drink. And I said, Cindy, these are Shirley Temples. They cost like $2. Like, she's just throwing me one to keep tipping. And she's like, those aren't hard drinks? I'm like, Jesus, you think I can hold my liquor? This is my number six.
six Shirley Temples.
It's a work thing, Bill, okay?
And your dentist is going to love you, dude.
He's diabetic over here.
Andy's hypertension is turning him the same color as a Shirley Temple. This is great. This is great. We love it.
And thank you, Cindy. Love you.
And thanks to the bartender who was just serving Andy up. Keep him coming. So what I did find was that 1994 was the start of the OJ trial. And I know that they've done a pretty extensive like documentary about the OJ trial. And so I don't want to talk about the OJ trial, but I just remember being a kid and it being such a like topic of conversation. Like you'd hear about the glove and all these different conspiracy theories and stuff. And you're just a kid. Like, I don't know what the fuck's going on. Anyone have like any takes on that as a kid, like hearing about this in the news?
For sure. Like I remember that was the first time I remember in school them bringing out like, you know, that rack with the like busted old TV on it.
Oh, hell yeah.
The TV cart? Yeah.
Yeah, the TV cart. They roll that in and they're like, we're going to watch the verdict of this. And they're like, why?
Yeah.
Didn't they announce it too over the speaker, the loudspeakers?
I was in Egremont and I remember, so I'm at Egremont Elementary and the verdict came in and I remember two kids, I won't name them, but I do remember who they were started going down the hallway chanting guilty. And I was like, you know nothing about the trial. Like this is your parents telling you
that. Yeah, absolutely.
And then years later, Seinfeld parried it all the time.
Yeah. I just remember, I was like, wait, isn't this a dude from Naked Gun? He killed somebody? Nordberg? How? He's too likable. But there was something more sinister in his trousers.
Yes.
Any other takes?
I mean, we were so young when that
happened. Yeah, that's what I'm
not all of us.
I think it kind of paves the way for show trials. As they are for like the worst of the kind of justice system. Like, cause like we talk about it now and it's like, Jesus Christ, like they shouldn't have said that stuff in schools.
Do you think that with all of that, like when we're that young, like watching it, that's why like all these CSI shows are so prevalent now. They're like, shit, we got them when they were like eight. So
they're like, this stuff makes like, cause everyone tuned into the OJ trial. Like,
yeah, look at the ratings.
That was throughout the US. Like, people were like, this is the thing. Like, for them to announce it in school, they clearly were like, these kids are following, not knowing, no, we're kids. We're not following this.
Well, just last season, we were talking about things we missed from the 90s, and we mentioned television as an event, and this was an event.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
There wasn't anything else to watch. Like, sure, you could watch other things on cable, but you didn't really have the same. I mean, yes, you could go rent a movie, but did people have these massive bookshelves full of movies back then? They were expensive.
Yeah.
Rental was like the way to go to be cost effective. It felt like people weren't spending $25.99 on a VHS tape. Like it just, especially like in the 90s, that was a lot. And a lot of them cost that much. So that was a good one. Another big one that I want to mention was, and this one was big because at the time my older sister, shout out Flo, she was very much into ice skating. And so the ice skating world in the Olympics were absolutely rocked by the Tonya Harding, Nancy Kerrigan debacle.
Debacle the way to say it though?
tragedy.
Was it a debacle like or an assault?
Well, sure. I mean, debacle is all encompassing. A total debacle. Come on.
Yeah.
You didn't watch WWF back then?
This was also probably like one of the first events that kicked 1994 off into the year that it would become in history.
For sure.
Yeah. And so remind me, because I feel like, again, I didn't want to like research it or go from like what Wikipedia says, but my memory is that Tonya Harding, like she denied it, but basically hired somebody to hit Nancy Kerrigan in the knee with like a large wrench. or something. And
they're both on Team USA. Figure skaters for the U.S. Yeah, for U.S. and
because they competed as a team, but also as individuals, right? Like that was the whole. Exactly. So and
one was ranked higher than the other.
And so if you want to guarantee a win, you got to take out the competition.
Right. I think that showed the craziness of parents too, though, because clearly the way she was raised was not to try to cheat to win. Like,
I'm sure it's a hyper competitive.
Not a new thing.
Not new for us because we were born in the 80s.
I remember thinking like when I first heard about it, like in a way it was kind of almost funny. Like it didn't seem like it was a serious thing. But then they showed on the news the video of her after she got hit, like the cameras were covering it, and she's just like sobbing. And I just remember like my heart sank. I felt awful.
Yeah, I mean, think about all the years that she put in for prep, and
didn't she win a gold?
Was she screaming why like the whole time? Like,
I know, I think she only won a silver. Oh, she didn't win a gold. I don't know if she fully. I don't know about the recovery. You know what? I should probably not speak absolutely on this. It's 30 years ago.
But here's the thing. Well, I don't know if anyone saw I, Tonya, the movie, but like, how good were they to Tonya Harding to have Margot Robbie play her?
Oh. They should have had Tonya Harding play herself.
Tonya Harding still got to compete. Like, that was craziness.
But I mean, she could land a triple axel, so they weren't gonna. It was a smash hit.
Oh, yeah, like
that is assault, and she did plead guilty, and she got community service. Like,
is like the modern day equivalent to this, like the Chris Rock slap?
Yeah,
like where someone gets assaulted on television, and everyone's just like, well. They're still going to win an award.
Yeah.
And Bill, you were right. I looked it up. She did win a silver only. She could have won gold. We don't know.
She could have.
Who won the gold? As a group, can we name five figure skaters from that year?
Nancy Kerrigan, Tonya Harding. Nancy Kerrigan, Chrissy Yamaguchi. Tonya Harding.
Yeah, that's exactly what I was thinking.
Maybe.
Did she take home gold?
Oksana Bayul.
Who the hell are you sure you're naming people?
Andy, you're on the page right now.
No, I'm on Nancy Kerrigan's page, not on the Olympic.
Look
page,
up the 1994 right? Olympic team.
Oh, Jesus.
Fucking guy over here. Drinks one Shirley tea and all of a sudden he's just cruising through.
I mean, this is why we got to plan things out. I need to know homework. I mean, I wouldn't have done it in the first
place. Yeah, exactly.
Your skating team. All right.
Brian Boitano, Scott Hamilton.
No, I only want females.
Oh, okay.
He's like, oh, I got to go to the other page. And he's on Dickipedia over here.
Oh, you were right. Liu Chen won the bronze.
Okay. All right. Well, we tried.
Yeah.
We named five. You just didn't name the gender thing until it was too late.
Okay. Yeah. We're good.
Oh, so Tonya Harding did place. She placed eighth. It's pretty bad.
Michelle Kwan, too bad. You were right about that.
Because I can't even pronounce that. No, never mind.
Well, if you
there was a Canadian girl, but I cannot pronounce it.
I'm sure there's probably like some documentaries about it. I think the film I, Tonya that came out like very much tries to make her like a sympathetic character. However you feel about that, I would just say like I wouldn't take my facts from there, but definitely a devastating time if you were like a child that was looking up to the Olympics and it's like, this is what the USA is putting out to the world right now.
I mean, like, that's the thing, right? You're Team USA. Like, above all else, you're a team.
Like, yeah.
Well, yeah, but I mean, you get sponsorships and lots of money if you're...
You still go to compete as an individual at the end of the day.
But you represent America, like, or whatever team you're on.
Is
like,
the point.
You represent that.
Like, yeah, and what says America more than...
accurately from what we've learned about America.
Yeah.
I want all that money.
Another pretty big news story was the death of Kurt Cobain, 1994. And as we'll get into in a little bit with some of like the number ones from the Billboard charts, like... It's a very pop R&B heavy year. Doesn't feel like there's a lot of rock and roll representation. But obviously, like, Nirvana really brought a different sense of musicality to I think also what was kind of like coming out of like the glam era of rock and roll. I mean, you had bands like Metallica that were playing thrash, and you still had hardcore bands and more underground bands. But in terms of the mainstream, we went from glam metal to like grunge rock. Yeah. And I think Nirvana kind of helped kick that off.
Hugely influential and hugely sad. Like in school, just like, you know, that was such big music. I mean, because as me as, you know, 12 to 13, like, man, that hit right in the feels. And this was music that was like shaping who I was becoming. And yeah, losing Kurt was, I mean, devastating. And just as you got older and learned his struggles and what he was going through, like, it just makes it so much sadder. And how much he was, you know, like trying and just torn apart, you know, like it's really devastating as you get older and delve more into it. And
yeah,
but it was really sad at the time too.
And there's a few probably from the 90s of like really influential artists that also had like young kids that all passed away like at a really young age. But definitely like grunge was more of a movement than just a music scene. And, you know, for better or for worse, lacking deodorant or whatever, certainly like shaped music to come for, it's still shaping music today. Yeah. And you can tell there's a resurgence in a way, because I think if you go to, and this is probably where, you know, Kurt's rolling in his grave, but like you go to an average, like Bradley's type location, it's like they're selling Nirvana shirts there. Like it's so commercial.
It's been commercialized so much. But his influence, like, so like bands you wouldn't even think, like Streetlight Manifesto, like, you know, like ska band, but they have three songs about Kurt or mention Kurt. Like his effect was definitely a ripple. And I think it definitely paved the way for a more commercial punk rock community. Like that before that, you could say like the Ramones, like that 70s stuff, but like, I think it primed that punk revival that, you know, would start up later, actually in this year and stuff. Like,
yeah, we mentioned before, like, this is the year that the album Dookie by Green Day came out, and again was like taking a punk sentiment, pop punk, I guess you could call it, for that time frame, and putting it on mainstream television, like on MTV during daylight hours, not just like at midnight.
I mean, look at Woodstock 94 with Green Day's like iconic performance there.
Yeah. And again, 94, as we're mentioning, 25 year anniversary of the original Woodstock. So that's Woodstock 94. Also like wild, I mean, not quite Woodstock 99.
The best of the Woodstocks. Am I right?
I mean, if you're a Limp Bizkit fan, yeah. I mean, you are a Limp Bizkit fan, so yes.
Like, it's really, like, music in 1994 is really interesting because the top music was all sort of this R&B type music, but all these albums came out, like, by Pearl Jam and Soundgarden, and, like, this, all these albums came out, but still the top sort of album charts were not that type of music.
And that's probably like true for the history of time, but it's still just interesting because there's not a lot of variety on the number one chart, right? So like, if you think about it now, there's probably a little bit of variety, but 1994 was essentially, there were three number one singles.
One dude picking everything.
Yeah. Well, I guess like whatever the radio plays too, but there were three number one singles by Ace of Base in 1994. Ace of fucking Base had three number one singles.
It was glorious year. Bangers.
You know what they are.
Andy, can you name them?
Nope. I don't.
Yes, you can.
Can I? For 94?
I saw the...
Oh, wait, is that the sign?
Yep.
Oh, all right.
And then
all that young in 94.
All that blank wants.
I saw the sign.
We're on a different song.
Opened up eyes.
A little bit behind. Is it or not? We might be lagging just a bit.
All That She Wants and Don't Turn Around. Those were like the three number one singles.
I feel like that was like, because I was like nine then. And I feel like that was like, that tape single was like probably the first tape that I bought.
Yeah. That's the first tape that I
remember. I had the cardboard cover.
Yes.
Little slip in.
Yes. Yep.
It was so good.
That's probably the first tape that I ever bought myself.
Wow.
Or had my mom buy me or whatever.
Well, because it was poppy, but it wasn't bubblegum, you know, like, which was different. It was kind of like a modern day, like ABBA. You know what I mean? It was like these two guys and two girls and just jamming out on these songs, like cool stuff. But from the R&B perspective, so you have Boyz II Men with I'll Make Love to You that like spent the most time on the number one spot on the charts that year.
That was a banger of a song, though.
Literally.
Really close your eyes, make a wish, and blow out the candle light.
For there must have been more babies conceived in 1994. Like, look up the facts on that. But like, people were fucking to that song. Like, no doubt about it.
The population of Philadelphia like grew like doubled at least.
Yeah, they could do a 7-part Cooley High Harmony.
Yeah,
but they right. So after it's like okay, so this song I'll Make Love to You on the charts, and then it holds its place, and then it gets replaced like any song does on the charts, number one spot. Guess what it gets replaced by?
All For One.
Motown Philly.
No, it is another Boyz II Men song, On Bended Knee. Another absolute thruster, banger, whatever you want to call it.
Baby, I'm sorry. Please forgive me for all the wrong I've done. Please come back home, girl. I know you put all your trust in me. I'm sorry I let you down.
That was on the charts for a bit too. But as Jared mentioned right before I'll Make Love to You is I Swear by All For One. Okay, like I'm just gonna say it. Like I remember karaokeing the shit out of that in my bedroom, like with a brush all the time. That was like the song. It was so good. If you were like idolizing somebody at that point, All For One was that band. Not for Bill, because he was cooler. He knew. It was that.
That's I was listening to Dookie.
11 weeks on the chart, on the number one spot on the chart. That's like a fifth of the year.
Holy God.
People were bumping, I Swear.
I Swear.
I mean, it was a great song.
And like people had no shame of blaring that on their jam box.
Because everyone was. People would hear it and they go, yeah, turn it up.
Little Fly 92.
Yeah, you could take the high part, the low part. It was just a boy group, you know?
Yeah.
So it was definitely a year of groups, right? I guess like, because Boyz II Men kind of held that down for a while until like Backstreet Boys and NSYNC like at the tail end of the 90s, like 98, 99. But for like, you know, a male group, like they were holding it down.
Yeah.
But just an odd, interesting year, as we mentioned. Some other things on the chart that year, Mariah Carey at the beginning of the year with Hero. I think it's because that was in the movie Hero with Dustin Hoffman. I think it was on the soundtrack, so I feel like it probably got a little bit of play because of that movie too. It probably also dominated 1993 is my guess, because I'm seeing it in January. I'm not going back, but that's my guess.
Yeah.
There were three washed up rock singers that had a number one track for 3 weeks, All For Love by Bryan Adams, Rod Stewart, and Sting.
Yeah.
Wow. In love you
live, I'll make a stand, I won't. They're like, wait, are they groups of singers? This is what the people are asking for.
But again, from a soundtrack, can anyone guess the film?
Oh, God.
Little
Giants.
What
was the song called again?
All For Love.
Let's make it all for one. All for love. Was this a Robin Hood?
It's close.
Oh,
Think about, all right, if you were going trick-or-treating, which is coming up soon, if you're going right trick-or-treating, what is a low desirability for a candy bar you're getting?
Whatchamacallit?
Milk Duds?
Is Milk Duds
Almond
a movie?
Almond Joy?
It's got to be the name of a movie, you fuckers. Almond
you
Joy.
You said candy.
What if we don't have I'm trying to give you a hint. All right. Goobers. Three Musketeers.
Now and later.
Oh! Whoa! That's a great candy bar.
Thank you, Bill. I was going to say, you said a low candy bar. I would fuck a Three Musketeers.
I didn't say it was bad. Right now.
I'm not saying it's bad. I'm just saying it's...
You said it...
I said it's low desirability.
That's a high desirable candy bar.
I think we should go back to the F. Mary Kill episode. I'm pretty sure whoever got that one killed it.
They were wrong then.
I think it was you.
It might have been Bill.
All right.
I might have made that a really hard one for him, though.
That's true.
Well, I was going to say, I think they were all really good candies.
Could have been a Milky Way, too.
Another track that I know Bill has mentioned is a guilty pleasure of his. I don't know if he's that guilty about it. But this artist is also playing at the Big E upcoming, or maybe it already happened. But Lisa Loeb with Stay is also number one on the charts that year in August. It was a summer banger.
You say, I only hear what I want to. Say, I talk so
shout out to Big E. Wasn't there a big fight at the Big E on Friday? Saturday?
No idea.
Isn't there always a big fight at the Big E?
I think there was a fire?
I thought it was a fight.
There was a fire in the horse barn or something?
Unintentional fire?
I mean, I think the fire intended to be there.
Is there a fire?
It's true. That's probably what happened.
Something happened. Horse.
Hopefully that little Pittsfield fire bug wasn't out. Like fires the Big E.
Yikes.
I didn't dox him. Don't worry. I don't know his name.
Well, I guess point being for some like sketchy shit that happened that year, there's a lot of love making songs in the number one. It was a sexy year.
It was a very sexy year.
I mean, wasn't Bill Clinton playing saxophone?
He was.
Good point. That's a good point, Andy.
I'll just say it because it's on here and it's also what I would consider to be probably what people thought was a love-making song back then, but R. Kelly had Bump and Grind for a couple weeks at the number one spot.
My mind's telling me no, 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 but my body.
Do you think that that song was...
I'll tell like, anyone.
Given what we know now, do we think that that song was about P. Diddy?
Oh,
maybe.
You are going down a slippery slope, my friend.
Yeah.
So it's become slippery. A conspiracy theory podcast. Let's do it.
Maybe you need to bleep that part out so we don't get murdered.
Allegedly.
He's in jail now, Diddy. He can't
allegedly.
Allegedly he's in jail?
It's his clone in jail. Don't worry about it.
Don't worry. Everything's going to be fine. Oh, no. Just like that horse of the Big E.
In like 4 weeks, we're going to see like posts that are like, P. Diddy didn't kill himself. just going to happen. Just saying. So obviously other shit came out in 94 for music. The reason we're kind of talking about the charts is like just to be a little bit more all encompassing of what like the average person was listening to during this time.
At 8 years old.
Yeah. I think it was really like owning and having my own music to listen to. I was probably like 10. Does that sound like a good age where you're like really wanting your own stuff and not just somewhere like what's on the radio?
Yeah.
96 was a good year for me. That was Jared too. And Bill's like, 96. I remember that's when I got my first car.
Bill was legal drinking age.
Bill's like, I was drinking hard liquor at 96.
Yeah.
I was working at the quarry.
All right. So also in pop culture, obviously it was a big, massive year for movies. So to call out a few, I think this is really the start of the summer blockbuster with Speed. So Speed came out, I think, in like July of that year. And I think from then on, like we always have a summer blockbuster, like a big movie that comes out in the summer to really like draw people to the movies. And Speed kind of started that. I mean, say what you will about the film. I don't know if it's like something anyone's watched in the last 10 years, but like,
oh God, come on. It's a great film.
I might counterpoint that.
Okay. Jaws.
Jurassic Park. Jaws, yeah. Also a Spielberg movie. Was Jurassic Park 93?
Did it come out in the summer?
We're talking about 94.
I know, but like if that came out in the summer, maybe now they're like,
1993, Bill. Yeah.
Let's release
what
a big
month
movie.
In 93?
Well, yeah. So tell me right this second. Hold on.
Because like a lot of the movies come out around Christmas.
June 11th, okay. 1993.
Motherfucker, I know some 93.
Bill, that's some fact checking Wick right here. No, Jurassic Park in 93 started the blockbuster.
So it's funny because we talk about, you know, VHS tapes costing a lot of money and people not having a lot of VHS tapes. I remember my grandmother had 4 VHS tapes and it was Speed.
Banger.
Jurassic Park.
Banger.
Mrs. Doubtfire.
Hell yeah.
Oh. And Sister Act. And yes! Those were the 4 films that my grandmother owned on VHS that we could
shout out
watch
to
when
Annie.
We were at her house.
Shout out to Annie's grandmother.
Come on. We got to, oh man, I would have hung out with her.
All right, next get together, I'm pulling those 4 VHS tapes out. And we're going to watch them.
We're going to rank them.
Back to back.
Spoiler.
Double feature. Quadruple feature.
Now, can I just, quick question. So like, if we're talking about Sister Act.
Yeah.
Is Sister Act 2 better?
Yes.
You get Lauren. You get a very young Lauren Hill pre-Fugees.
Yeah. No. Eric, you're 100% right.
I think of them as two completely independent films. I don't think of them as a sequel because I think that they're too different from one another.
That wasn't the question though, right? Sister Act 2 was way better than Sister Act 1. Although Sister Act 1 was good, Andy, before I get the pushback there. And Sister Act 2 is dope as
hell. It's kind of like Ninja Turtles.
They were both so good. I'm not going to push back. I'm going to just say personally.
I'm say like Godfather.
It's hard to rank them because they were both so good.
Whoopi is the De Niro of the monastery.
That's true. Sister Marie Clarence. What was her name? Is that right? Did I get that?
Yeah. Sister Mary Clarence.
Sister Running
Mary
from Clarence, the mob.
That's a great... Dude, your memory is impeccable.
I try. All right, so some of the big films that year, and it's hard because if you look at the run times of like what I would consider probably the top 3 films of that year, very long movies, like 2.5 hours on average. So we got Forrest Gump.
Great movie.
Shawshank Redemption. Pulp Another Fiction. Banger. Which is still the highest grossing independent movie of all time.
That's wild.
All 2 hours and 30-ish minutes.
Wow.
And it's a shame Shawshank won no awards at all. No Oscars. And it's a phenomenal film. But it came out with other great films. That was a banger of a year for movies.
Also, another big win for the indie film that year was a film that was done over a long course of time in off hours of a convenience store, little movie called Clerks.
Really?
Yes.
Yeah, Kevin Smith would film that like after his shift there. They would just like film sometimes all night. That's why they had to have a reason for the shades to be pulled down, essentially, because they needed to be able to like, so kind of a cool factoid there, but like big indie film that really like brought him into pop culture.
100%. And like at 13, like that's one of the greatest movies to ever watch. I mean, the language, just everything. One of my favorite movies of all time.
Now, the person having, and I'll reference a show that used to be on back in the day, but like the best week ever, we'll call it the best year ever, Jim Carrey.
Yeah.
So Jim Carrey in 1994 rips out Dumb and Dumber, Ace Ventura, Pet Detective, and The Mask.
Holy cow.
Is there anybody like in modern day that rips off a 3 film in a year that has that popularity? Like today?
Not that I can
rock, and they shouldn't.
Okay.
Yeah.
Can't count voice acting though, because that's just easy. Gotta be live action.
I don't know. I watched Mrs. Doubtfire, so.
I mean, say what you want about the films. He plays three very specific, unique, wild characters in each of them and knocks it out of the park.
I mean, those are three very different movies.
I will say this about Jim Carrey. He is an insanely underrated actor. Like, he just is. I feel like I everyone thinks of him as comedy only, and he can do scary movies. I mean, he can do dramatic roles. He's got range. He's just not known. People don't consider him for it.
Well, and I think the important piece to mention, too, is that, like, he's the draw in these films, right? Because they're like three different directors, writers. Like, he's really the draw that makes the film what it is. Like, none of these movies, like, on their own are necessarily, like, amazing films without having, like, his presence in there.
Yeah.
But the funny thing is think about the quotability of those three movies, too. Like, what kid wasn't running around like an asshole saying, smoke in?
Somebody stop me. Or
alrighty then.
Alrighty then,
somebody stop me.
Yeah.
Just insane. Our pets' heads are falling off.
Well, I think there's something to be said, too, for the comedy of 1994. So 1994 was also, like, one of the big years of resurgence of Saturday Night Live. And it was when Chris Farley and Adam Sandler and Phil Hartman were all sort of leading Saturday Night Live. It's the year that the Hanukkah song came out, which is, like, you know, so funny when you think about, like, the specific comedy that was happening then. And I think Jim Carrey, although he was not a Saturday Night Live person, he was sort of on the other side of that.
Or no, In Living Color. I'm sorry.
In Living Color. In Living Color were the Wayans brothers.
Like, it all sort of fits together, that type of comedy that probably would lie too much now, but.
Well, 1994 also, like, for a little bit of a down point, I'm just going to call it out, like, probably one of the most anticipated sequels, if you were a kid, that came out that year, that was absolute dog shit. Can anyone guess what it was? So you're a kid.
Okay.
Think of a kid, a movie that you watched as a kid, starring kids, that resonated with you, or that you remember, or gave you a tremendous amount of emotion.
RoboCop.
Is that when Honey, I Shrunk the Kids 2 came out?
The Goonies 2? That's
another funny indie.
It's not a bad call, but I actually liked, it was Honey, I Blew Up the Kids. I actually thought that was pretty good. My Girl 2.
Oh, Jesus.
Oh,
God, that even existed. That.
Yeah, like completely blocked from the memory.
My mood ring was brown for shit when I watched that. Oh.
And wasn't she 7 years old having a relationship with her teacher?
Well, that was the original.
Oh, that was the original? Oops.
Yeah, she dates the kid from Pre-Hysteria with the bad bowl cut. He was in Last Action Hero. That's this one. But he's kind of like her cousin or something, too. Or like, mate will be her cousin. It's kind of fucked up.
Pretty bad.
This poor girl. You know, she can't get her shit together. She sends her poor friend into the woods to find her mood ring.
No, she didn't send him. Didn't he do it in My Girl? He did it on his own because he liked her.
He
wanted to do it for her, and he hated the bees.
He felt pressured at the end of the day. Acts of service was his love language, and he tried to win her over.
Thomas J. R.I.P.
He can't see without his glasses.
We can't see it all now.
Bitch, they got stabbed.
Bad people.
That was an awful kids movie. I mean, like, because it's like, this is too heavy for kids, My Girl. You're like, what the fuck you just take me to?
I'll also take a moment just to say that we put out a poll on Instagram because we mentioned it on the last podcast, Best of the Best or Three Ninjas, what was the better film? It was overwhelming that people picked Three Ninjas, but I feel like people didn't know what Best of the Best was, and I'll give them all a chance to go in and reclaim their decision after watching Best of the Best.
Fair enough.
You're all lying on there. But that was a sequel. Three Ninjas Kick Back came out. Also pretty lackluster follow-up to...
Pretty mid.
Yeah, it was definitely mid. I want to mention a couple other darker films that came out that year that were sort of like big in pop culture. The Crow.
Yeah. Which
I think if you were younger, like the whole story about Brandon Lee and getting shot on set, or was that Crow 2? I'm trying to remember.
That was Crow 1.
That was Crow.
It was the original one. Yeah. Really fucked up story. Bruce Lee's son, Brandon Lee, they're supposed to be blanks and someone got one and was not blanks and unfortunately died on set. The movie lived on.
It hit him in the heart too, though, like, which is
good,
like,
shot.
Absolute craziness.
I mean, RIP Brandon Lee.
Yeah.
And
then they finished the movie anyways with the stunt double.
Yeah. And he was like, listen, check all the guns again. No more shooting scenes. And without the Crow, we wouldn't have had Sting's NWO personality. So
yeah,
everyone with a goth friend knew the Crow. Like,
yeah,
friend loved
anyone with a goth crow. Friend, Andy.
You have a specific friend you're thinking of? All the goth friends.
I did have all the goth friends.
Andy had a goth girlfriend.
I wish. I mean, no, I don't.
His Andy, didn't your Noni or something?
Nunu.
Oh, Nunu.
Ellie and her grandfather. I always thought Nabil was my goth girlfriend.
Shout out to
doxing Nabil, poor Nabil.
Shout out to Nabil.
Shout out to Nabil.
Yeah.
Listener of the pod.
He's not listening.
Yeah, yeah.
Oh, he is 100% listening.
Also, Natural Born Killers.
Yeah.
Which was a weird one because it was like, I think it was, so this is obviously post Christmas Vacation. This is post Cape Fear, which is Juliette Lewis playing sort of these like demure characters. And then going into Natural Born Killers. Woody Harrelson's excellent in it.
Yeah.
What movie is he not is he bad in? Oh, Woody Harrelson.
Like, oh, he's great in everything.
He's great in everything.
Hunger Games.
What? He was losing in Hunger Games.
Joking. Oh.
I was like, how dare you? And next you're going to tell me Nick Cage is a bad actor.
Not her first role by any means, but also Natalie Portman in The Professional. Or Leon the Professional. Oh,
such a good movie.
Great movie. Really underrated film. Epic. If you haven't seen it, it's a really, really good movie.
The cast all around, once again, just phenomenal cast.
Like, yeah.
Like from top to bottom, great actors.
And for soundtracks, because I think it's probably one of the biggest soundtracks of all time. And I think I picked it when we did a movie soundtrack. The Lion King came out that year. And the soundtrack to that was pretty epic.
I think we should give a shout out, though. RIP Mufasa.
Yeah, James Earl Jones.
James Earl Jones passed away this year.
Oh, I thought you meant the actual lion in the movie.
Oh, no. Like, I mean, yeah, like that too.
And the bugs.
And the
In A Bug's Life.
Poor James Earl Jones, you know?
Yeah. Love James poor Earl Jones.
No, not poor James Earl Jones. He lived to be like 90 years old. He had an awesome fucking life.
Could have been longer.
Was The Sandlot 94? No, it was 93. I was going to say.
Maybe we should revisit 93 next week.
It's past 30 years from 93, okay? We should have done that
31,
last
31, like Reggie Miller.
We could do that.
I say we talk about a movie that's near and dear to my heart. Came out in 1994. And that is Little Giants.
Yes.
Yeah.
Amazing film.
There were two really strong kids sports movies that came out this year. And Little Giants was my favorite, right? You had the O'Shea brothers played by Rick Moranis.
And
Kevin.
Whatever. Yeah. Kevin O'Shea.
Kevin O'Shea, played by Ed O'Neill, who was great. Like, you couldn't pick a better Kevin O'Shea than Ed O'Neill.
Screams like Pop Warner coach, right?
Oh,
100%. Yeah. Owned used cars, right? Used car lots. Or
No, he only sells new cars. Come on. This guy's a winner.
Oh, I got to rewatch my Little Giants, man.
But he tells his niece the icebox. Listen, all right, get on the sidelines. You got to cheer, right? You're a girl. She Becky. Says no.
Yeah. She wants to play.
I'm going to freaking fuck these boys up.
You got a young Devin Sawa. You got the kid who thinks he's Michael Irving and puts tar on his chest so he catches the ball and gets stuck in his hands. You got the little kid with the glasses, intimidation, whatever that kid was.
But then you had the really nerdy kid to help make the plays.
True.
The same kid?
I think that was the kid who was in Boy Meets World, right?
Yes. Minkus.
Yeah.
Was there a better play ever designed for a football team than the annexation of Puerto Rico?
No. And the name
Jim Harbaugh's got a couple, but I don't think so.
It's basically a fumble rooski. Epic.
I've had my kids watch lots of movies from our childhood. That is not one of them. I think maybe that's
Oh.
coming up.
Yeah. They watched all the Home Alone series, yet they didn't hit up Little Giants. Oh, no.
The other one I was going to mention was actually, it was a sequel to Mighty Ducks, D2.
That was
a really good film. Also a really good follow-up. You get corporate Gordon Bombay eating ice cream with the enemy.
The Swedes, right? No, it was Finland. Right?
Iceland? Iceland.
That's right. Iceland. Because we all know.
And that's when we
learned. Iceland, bunch of assholes.
I think we all learned something from that movie, which was that Iceland is nice and Greenland is cold.
That's right.
I didn't know that before that film. They didn't teach
the I didn't know how intense they were about their hockey, that they were like, we're going to fuck up America over this.
By their
almost Achilles World War III started over this hockey over D2.
Great montage in that movie when they all go to when they're in LA and Goldberg pretends that he's Aaron Spelling's nephew or something and has all the models try clothes on for them. It's like, I think we need to see some bathing suits and like, get out, you perverts. Yeah.
And then they run into Kenan Thompson. You know, he's got the knuckle puck.
The knuckle puck.
Knuckle puck!
But in general, big, big films. And again, like being that year, I was 8 years old, like for D2 and like Little Giants to come out. And I was big into sports at that time, like huge influential. I didn't play hockey, sure. But it still was a movie that I loved to watch. I had the clamshell VHS and I was like psyched on it. I didn't have many. I had Little Giants and D2 for sure.
I mean, D2 was a great sequel to D1, and it's hard to do that sometimes. I mean, Little Giants didn't even have a sequel.
Well, because the kids grow so fast.
Yeah.
It's like, oh, no, they're like 35-year-old kids playing in Pop Warner football. You think they could have done a Little Giants 2?
Like, medium giants.
Yeah, exactly. Medium giants. I mean, they did a D3. They sent him to college. They're like, shit, these kids are too tall. We sent him to the Olympics. We got to do college now.
Well, we needed those sports movies because it was a sad summer for sports.
Oh, right. Yeah. Was Phil, it? Tell us about what was going on in 1994.
For the first thing was when the NBA season ended, still no Michael Jordan. He was playing baseball in AAA.
What?
The Rockets had just won their second back-to-back titles. And we were having an awesome year in baseball. It was the year that the Montreal Expos were the best team in baseball. And guys, these were the absolute worst team. I mean, this is the Bad News Bears of Major League Baseball. But you had Vladimir Guerrero, Larry Walker, Pedro Martinez, Delano DeShields. They were just tearing it up. And you had Tony Gwynn, who was batting about .396. He was so close to hitting .400, which is, I know this probably sounds weird to y'all, but like it hadn't been since, I believe, the 50s with Ted Williams was the last time anybody batted over .400. So people were really jazzed about this year. Trevor Hoffman in San Diego was just blowing people away with the saves also. Like, so San Diego was great. Montreal was great. I was a big fan of Cleveland back then, and they had all these young players like Manny Ramirez, Jim Tomei, and Kenny Lofton. And it was heartbreaking because there's been work stoppages in baseball. There's been strikes, there's been lockouts, but there's always been a World Series in October. Near the end of August, near my birthday, the contract came up and they went on strike, which, you know, there was a lot of things going on there.
Well, wasn't it over the fact that they didn't want the $1 million salary cap?
No, baseball's never had a salary cap.
Okay.
But there was...
Wasn't
there
they proposing a salary cap, though?
There was money issues about the revenue sharing and who's getting what. And so some teams wouldn't spend hardly any money on their teams, but they would still get money. The owners, there's 30 teams, and so they would get that money distributed. So the Yankees have a big payroll, but say Cincinnati has a small payroll. They both get the same cut of the pie, but the players don't get that same cut because only one team's spending, is the way that I look at it. There's other ways to look at it.
And so when you're saying 1994, Bill, this is, and why it's a big deal, is like, this is one of 2 years in the history of MLB that there wasn't a World Series, and they were exactly 90 years apart.
Was it a conspiracy, though, to stop Montreal from winning?
It could have been, because this is the other heartbreaking part of this. So after this season, Larry Walker goes to Colorado. Vlad stays there a little bit, but pretty soon, we're going to go back to movies on here. Angels in the Outfield. He's going to Anaheim to be an Angel. Delano DeShields did stick around, but Pedro went down to Boston. Yeah, this was such an awesome team and just never got to see it actually compete. They never had the chance to get to the World Series and win a World Series for the city of Montreal. And that may have saved the franchise there. They later moved on and they're the Washington Nationals now, but they moved out of Montreal. It was a fun time though. And Tony Gwynn never came close to hitting 400 after that too. That was the thing as a kid. I loved watching this guy bat, and it took a while. It took the home run chase of Mark McGwire and Sammy Sosa to get fans back into baseball. It was ruined baseball for years.
What was that? Was that home run race in 98?
Yes, yes. So think about it. Like it didn't kick back in 95 until I believe May. Like it was a long, I've never seen a strike in baseball as long as that either.
Did everyone hate baseball because the Yankees were winning? Is that
could have been it, or that Montreal did they stole it from Montreal? And you know, there's a lot of poutine that spoiled. You know,
can I just, and I'm not trying to transition off this, but can we talk about Angels in the Outfield for a sec? Like,
okay,
great movie, but why is the sportscaster the villain? I never understood that. Even when I rewatch it, like, you could cut him out of there and it does not change that movie whatsoever.
Was that 1994?
Yeah.
I don't remember Angel.
I thought it was like one of the worst of the baseball movies that came out, to be honest with you.
I just remember it was a great thing.
Movie. Was it Little Big League?
Little Big League kind of sucked too.
What's the other one? What's the one with the rookie?
Rookie of the Year.
Rookie of the Year was great.
Rookie of the Year.
Yeah. I mean, that's definitely the best out of all of them.
Yeah, had the funkiest. The one where he
breaks his arm, right?
Yeah.
Okay.
The tendons have healed a little tight. You know what? A funny thing about that movie, I know we're going to get off topic here. I think it came out the prior year, but Daniel Stern actually directed that film.
Really?
And you know how he plays the kind of like dorky character in it?
Yeah.
I think they wanted him to be in the movie. And so in order for him to be able to be in the movie, but also direct it, he would find ways to put himself in a predicament so that he was stuck somewhere. So you didn't see him on screen for a long time. So remember, he gets stuck between the two connecting doors in the hotel.
Yeah.
He gets stuck in that like batting or the cage area in the dugout during like the World Series. He's stuck in there. Remember, he's always stuck somewhere where you can't see him. It's really a brilliant way. Kind of like Clerks we mentioned of like,
yeah,
having to film and figuring out a way to like, why is it dark in there all the time?
A good like plot that, device so. There.
Yeah, I heard that story.
I mean, that was 93 Rookie of the Year with Gary Busey. I mean, he's still a great actor.
You got to have the have to. He's a fucking maniac.
He cracks me up. I mean, he's good at what he does.
We'll save it for another pod.
Yeah, we'll save it for another pod.
The Strange Case of Gary Busey is going to definitely be a podcast topic.
Oh my God, it should be. Like, Gary Busey, good or bad, we can discuss.
Well,
wow.
A lot of stuff in the last 30 years, but I think it was kind of fun to go back because that was just a really big year. I think it was like a part of our coming of age tale, all of us. I think some influential movies and music and stuff came out that year.
I mean, I was already 35.
Great cast, though, too.
True.
And some actors were like really like unknown. I feel like unknowns at the time for some of these movies.
Yes.
Like Nala?
No, like Matthew McConaughey Timon was in Angels in the Outfield. Like,
did he do other stuff?
And Adrian Brody as well was in Angels in the Outfield. Like you look at these guys now and you're like, holy shit. I mean, granted, we all know Danny Glover, but he's a national treasure.
Hell yeah.
True. You know?
Great.
I'll give you that. Hold on. Sorry. I was trying to look something up on my phone and all my tabs got closed somehow.
It might have been the Angels in the Outfield.
Exactly. Why do you have so many tabs open right
something.
Now? Something. Wouldn't it happen in 94?
Nope. You had one window.
No, but AOL and Netscape, was it Netscape?
Yeah
Netscape.
That came out in 1994.
Yeah. That was the big one.
AOL, Time Warner Cable's biggest mistake. Acquiring AOL.
Okay. Yeah, because that killed WCW.
Yeah, killed WCW. And then AOL, I think, tanked after that.
Yeah.
They're like, that's when
Roadrunner High Speed so much money.
Cable came out. Cable internet and AOL went down.
Yeah.
What was the number one math computer game of 1994? What was the shit they were forcing us to play in school all the time?
Number Munchers.
Yeah.
That's the only one I'm thinking of.
Yeah.
They couldn't afford computers at my school.
I mean, I don't think it was a 94 game because I remember playing it on old Commodore 64.
It was the upgrade.
Number Munchers. What a good game. Oregon Trail.
Oregon Trail's
Oregon
way better.
Oregon Trail we did have.
Yeah.
Sorry, can we all go back?
Clears.
Oregon
Math
Trail.
Blaster was a 1994 game. I never played it though.
Fair.
It was the Oregon Trail.
I like Oregon better than Oregon, but I understand it's supposed to be Oregon.
Bro, what the fuck is hair sushi?
What? What is hair sushi?
Is it Oregon? I was thinking origami. Eric.
There was always that one kid when you were playing, and then you know they're like, just trade everything for bullets. And you're like, all right, I mean, we might as well. Fuck it. Screw
I only hunted. Wanted to shoot the buffalo. Like that was all I did.
I never made it to Oregon. Sorry, I never made it there on the trail.
It was like you have 4,000 pounds of meat in this fucking thing you're trying to tow right now in this wagon.
The ox always died on me. I'm like, fuck it, shoot him.
Flipped your wagon, fjord in the river. Sorry. Lost all your supplies.
By the time I don't think I ever made it. Kids were always dead. I always died of diphtheria or something.
Andy Donner party of one.
I'm like, why isn't the wagon moving? Oh, that's right. The ox are dead. Fuck. I shouldn't have bought all bullets and one ox.
Definitely a lot more we could talk about from 1994. We'll put some polls out for Instagram. Some things that we missed that you want to talk or that you would hope that we would have mentioned.
Yeah.
And then we'll do the poll again Angels if it's something he doesn't want to talk about.
Angels in the Outfield, that Christopher Lloyd in it, right?
Yeah. Christopher Lloyd was in it.
Yeah, because Disney had just bought the baseball team.
Like, oh, did he?
Yeah, no, the corporation, Andy, the corporation bought it. And they're like, we want it. How can we commercialize this? Let's make a movie.
Well, it was kind of like, we did it with the Cleveland Indians in Major League.
Okay, yeah.
Let's do a cleaned up
version. We did it with Mighty Ducks.
Okay.
Yeah.
If we're going to talk about Christopher Lloyd, I have to change the subject very quickly. To the greatest film of 1994.
Whoa.
Camp Nowhere.
Yes.
Oh, fuck
oh
yeah.
My God. So good. I mean, he put out two that year. I mean, one more. He's tied with Jim Carrey. He put out
For trivia, can anyone name the car that he was behind payments on? Remember, that's the whole thing is that he disappears because he's behind payments on this car and the sheriff's looking for him.
Oh. What movie are we discussing?
Camp Nowhere. Abby comes in guns blazing as soon as I ask one question about the movie, all of a sudden
goes probably on a mute. Subaru.
Andy, why are you Googling? Fuck
I'm
out
not,
of there.
I'm guessing
I see
it before
you.
I find
There's
it.
No reason you're looking down at all.
Dude, I want to find it. I guess Subaru and I want to know if I'm right.
It's you're not right.
Up on your face.
It's also the name of another.
Yeah, it doesn't say it on IMDb though.
It's also the name of another movie. The type of car.
Wait, from another movie?
DeLorean.
No, the name of the car is the name of
Herbie,
the movie.
The love bug.
Is it the love bug?
Is it Herbie?
You guys are Herbie? No, it's not Herbie.
Oh, a gremlin. Chitty, chitty, it
bang,
says.
Bang.
Yeah, it's a gremlin.
Oh, AMC Gremlin.
Let's see. Gremlin's pretty funny.
Oh, wow. This car looks awesome.
Yeah, it's a 1970. It's like a two door.
It kind of looks like the Stanza a little bit.
It does look like the Stanza.
Great soundtrack, too. There's a really good scene with a Cranberries track that pops up there. Good.
I'm in. I'm all in.
So he took a misstep with Angels in the Outfield, but then came right back with Camp Nowhere.
Banger.
Yeah. I think there's something, too, in the movie where he makes a joke that he got in trouble for trying to do Silence of the Lambs as a musical. Is that from that same... It was from a different movie. I can't think about it.
I really want to watch that movie over again. I want to see how kid appropriate it is.
When did Heavyweights come out? Was Heavyweights 94?
We should put a poll up if they want a podcast of us doing a commentary for.
Can I just say that our polls on Instagram do about as well as if a French pole vaulter was going over one of them. They got to knock it back down.
For the one person that votes,
wait, are you
that decides the future of it.
So basically, whether Abby or Wick goes on, decides which one it's going to be.
There are two other people who participate besides us usually.
Yeah. We had a lot of people for the three ninjas and Best of the Best. We had quite a few people vote on that one. Vote incorrectly, but still voted.
Okay. Eric shouting, stop the vote.
Seriously.
Here's a series of fraudulent electors.
Yeah. I think
Eric logs in with 9 different Instagram accounts.
Prove it.
I can get at least 3 sometimes.
That's fair. All right. Well, we're going to be back again a couple of weeks with a brand new episode. But for tonight, we're signing out of 1994 and going back to the real world 30 years later.
Aww.
I know it was fun while it lasted, but we'll see you all again soon. Good night, everyone.
Peace.
Bye.
Bye.
Bye.